Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio. We're coming to you live from Eastern Kentucky against the foothills of the Smokies. The solar wind is all the way down to 283.6 kilometers per second. The sun is blank again today, continuing a six-day streak of no sunspots. The solar minimum has lasted 760 days. By the way, you should know the typical solar minimum is only 485 days. No one knows what is going on with the sun. There were 33 earthquakes greater than 2.5 in the last 24 hours around the planet. Only two were greater than 5.0. The Earth seems to be rumbling around the globe at a low level, about 70 kilometers deep beneath the surface. Ironically, climate change appears to have stalled in the run-up to the upcoming World Summit in the Danish capital, where thousands of politicians, bureaucrats, scientists, business leaders, and environmental activists plan to negotiate a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. Billions of euros are at stake in the negotiations. The planet's temperature curve rose sharply for almost 30 years as global temperatures increased by an average of 0.7 degrees Celsius. That's about 1.25 degrees Fahrenheit. From the 70s to the late 1990s. At present, however, the warming is taking a break, confirms meteorologist Mojib Latif of the Leibniz Institute of Marine Sciences in the northern German city of Kiel. Latif, one of Germany's best-known climatologists, says that the temperature curve has reached a plateau. There can be no argument about that, he says. Sometimes you really can believe your eyes. That's what NASA's STEREO, that's the Solar Terrestrial Relations Observatory spacecraft, are telling researchers about a controversial phenomenon on the sun known as the solar tsunami. Years ago, when solar physicists first witnessed a towering wave of hot plasma racing along the sun's surface, they doubted their senses. The scale of the thing was staggering. It rose up higher than the Earth itself and rippled out from a central point in a circular pattern millions of kilometers in circumference. Skeptical observers suggested it might be a shadow of some kind, a trick of the eye, but surely not a real wave. Now we know, says Joe Gurman of the Solar Physics Lab at the Goddard Space Flight Center. Solar tsunamis are real. The technical name is Fast Mode Magnetohydrodynamical Wave, or MHD for short. I'll say that one more time. It's the Magnetohydrodynamical Wave. Now you know what MHD stands for. The one STEREO saw reared up about 100,000 1,000 kilometers high and raced outward at 250 kilometers per second. That's 560,000 miles per hour, packing as much energy as 2,400 megatons of TNT. The conspiracy behind the anthropogenic global warming myth, a.k.a. AGW, has been suddenly, brutally, and quite deliciously exposed after a hacker broke into the computers at the University of East Anglia's Climate Research Unit and released 61 megabytes of confidential files onto the Internet. When you read some of those files, including 1,079 emails and 72 documents, you realize just why the boffins at CRU might have preferred to keep them confidential. As Andrew Bolt puts it, this scandal could well be the greatest in modern science. These alleged emails, supposedly exchanged by some of the most prominent scientists pushing AGW theory, suggest conspiracy, collusion in exaggerating warming data, possibly illegal destruction of embarrassing information, organized resistance to disclosure, manipulation of data, private admissions of flaws in their public claims, and much more. The fact is that we can't account for the lack of warming at the moment, and it is a travesty that we can't. The CERES data, published in the August BAMS 09 supplement on 2008, shows there should be even more warming, but the data are surely wrong. Our observing system is inadequate. Our guest tonight is to be Kevin Smith. I'm just doing some checking right now. Give me one quick second to verify our phone number. It is correct. We will keep trying. Kevin Smith, as you know, is the host of the Kevin Smith Show. That is on Monday through Friday at 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific. Now, the interesting thing about his program is he also speaks on the paranormal, very similar to our program. However, Monday through Friday, those 2 hours, he is the most popular paranormal internet talk radio program out there. He's an independent, doesn't belong to any particular network, manages everything himself, and he's done a whale of a job building his network. He is also an author. He is a former investigator and as solid a citizen of Earth as have ever come. He is fluent in numerous languages, which is one of the reasons why he is here tonight with us. The reason I have him on, and we did not have an announcement on the website, is because there has been some absolutely stunning, stunning revelation in the news lately, but unless you could read Hungarian, you weren't going to get it. So we'll be right back in 40 seconds. With our guest, Kevin Smith. Don't go away. We'll be right back with X Squared Radio.
Spice extends life. The spice expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
You only think you get all the news reading our newspapers or online newspapers or even watching the mainstream media, but you haven't heard anything yet. Our guest tonight has a breakthrough, a disclosure of global proportions. Please welcome with me Kevin Smith. Welcome to the program, Kevin.
Well, thanks, Brooks. I'm glad to be here.
Kevin Smith, are you there?
Yes. I can hear you.
Ah, there we go. Now we can hear you fine.
Yeah.
Kevin, normally we don't do this, but it looks like our phone lines just lit up. Let's go ahead and take a call from Dan in Florida, line 3. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the program. Is Dan from Florida?
I don't need to be up. Yes. Hello?
Ah, there we go. Our switchboard is working hard out there in Paradise, California. Welcome.
Yes, sir. Hi. I was actually just trying to get on to your program before your guest got on, because it's kind of, I think it might be probably kind of an off-topic question, but hopefully you can just, I mean, I don't know if I can still
it's really
shoot it out there real
up.
Quick.
I can't hardly get the whole sentence out. Well, let's see. We'll just let him try to call back, and maybe he'll get a better line. Kevin, are you there?
Yes.
Now I'm not getting anybody.
Yeah, I'm here.
There you are.
Yeah.
Okay, Kevin and I have known each other for a number of years. He has a talk radio program on Monday through Friday. And about 8 to 10 p.m., I believe. Isn't that correct, Pacific time?
Pacific time, it's 7 to 9.
7 to 9, and it's the Kevin Smith Show. And if you want to access that, it's kevinsmithshow.com. We'll announce that several times tonight. But over the years, we've become colleagues of sorts, and we have been on each other's programs from time to time. He called me a couple of days ago because there was a news story. Actually, it was not in English. It was in, I believe, Hungarian.
No, Bulgarian. It was from Bulgaria.
Oh, Bulgarian. Okay, well, there you go. See, I know the difference between Hungarian and Bulgarian like I know the difference between north and south of France. I don't. But anyway, perhaps you can tell us the nature of this incredible news story. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, first, let me say that I saw it first in Bulgarian, and then I saw an English translation of that done by Reuters. In Bulgaria, they have a state agency, a government agency known as the Bulgarian Academy of Science. And within the Bulgarian Academy of Science, there is something called the Space Research Institute. So it would be their version of our NASA. And so the story was about the guy who's the deputy director of the Space Research Institute. So this would be equivalent to the number two guy at our NASA. He is an astrophysicist. He's got a very, very extensive resume. He is the top physicist in Bulgaria. And his name is Dr. Lakhizar Filipov. Dr. Filipov is quoted in the Bulgarian newspapers as saying that extraterrestrials are here. We are in constant communications with them. They're among us all the time, and you don't even realize it. And then this article, and I just want to quote, this is one sentence from the article. It says, "It was even claimed that some alien species were present during a media statement in which they had answered more than 30 questions put forward by Bulgarian Academy of Science personnel." Now, Brooks, when I read that, I said, you know, if all of this is true, this is absolutely a paradigm buster. This is earth-shaking. And that's why I got in touch with you.
Well, that is, I'm speechless, that there were aliens of sorts, of various races, I guess, or species, on a panel, and they were taking questions from these top scientists. Is that what the article is trying to say?
Well, that's the way I understand it, and let me read this again, and this is a quote now. "It was even claimed that some alien species were present during a media statement in which they had answered more than 30 questions put forward by Bulgarian Academy of Science personnel."
Wow. Now, Did they give the list of what the questions were?
No, they didn't. There's very little information in terms of detail in the article. Now, the newspapers in which this appeared are major media newspapers in Bulgaria. One of them is called the Sofia Echo, and the other one is called the Novinar Daily. And so this would be equivalent to having them show up, say, in the New York Times or Houston Chronicle, Los Angeles Times, a major newspaper. And but there was very, very little in the way of detail. Now, I got the Bulgarian version of this just before showtime on November 23rd. And I went on the air, and I told my audience that I have not had a chance to verify anything in this article, but it is so earth-shaking, I want to share it with you. And Brooks, because of the fact, you know, I've lived in that area of the world for a number of years, and didn't live in Bulgaria, but I've been through Bulgaria many times by car. So I've spent time there. But because of that, I know that these two newspapers are to be taken seriously. And so if it's not that just because the newspaper says it, well, it must be true. But it's because of the reputation in Bulgaria of these two newspapers and what they are saying. They are talking about the Bulgarian Academy of Science. They're talking about the Deputy Director of Space Research Institute. They're calling him by name. This would be equivalent to the New York Times putting a story out like this and saying Dr. Michio Kaku said it.
Well,
you know, you have to take it seriously, and so I reported it.
But I know you well enough to know that you're not going to take any reporter's word for it. I mean, they may be taking license with an offhand comment or, you know, even rumor. I know you well enough to know you would follow up. So what was your method of follow-up? How did you go about trying to verify what he reportedly said in the paper?
Well, the first thing I did, after I got off the air, and I promised my audience, I will follow up on this, but I wanted you to know about it. So after I got off the air that night, I got in touch with Jerry Wills. Jerry Wills is an associate of mine who works with me, helps me with the show, and he is the executive producer at Expeditions TV. And so I just wanted to bounce some things off of him, and we started talking about it. And Jerry got really excited about this, and he said, man, if I had this guy's number, I'd just call him. And because Jerry was so excited about it, and he wanted to talk to the guy, I had found Dr. Filipov's telephone number at his office, and I gave it to Jerry, and I said, well, give him a call. So Jerry did. He called him. In Arizona time, it was about midnight, and that meant it was about, I don't know, 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning in Bulgaria. And he talked with him. Dr. Filipov speaks English. So Jerry had the opportunity to talk with him for a few minutes, and Jerry's report to me later was that Dr. Filipov confirmed these details, and however, he said, and this is what was interesting, he said that this thing about aliens being present in the meeting, he fudged on that, and I can only interpret, since I was not in the conversation, I can only give you my interpretation of what I think was happening here. Dr. Filipov had already indicated that he had been already, within 24 hours of this hitting the news in Bulgaria, he had been getting some criticism, heavy criticism. And he said, people in my country are just wagging their heads at me. But they don't know what I know. They don't know what we know, is the exact quote. And he told Jerry, he said, but if you come here, I will show you what we know. And he didn't want to nail down. He avoided, he was evasive about nailing down the statement about the extraterrestrials being present in the meeting. But there's supposed to be another meeting in 2010, in the spring, early spring of 2010.
Interesting,
and
interesting.
He invited us to be at the meeting.
Oh.
Well,
I don't guess you'll pass that up.
I'm sorry?
I don't guess you'll pass that meeting up.
Well, I don't know, and I'll tell you. I was, when Jerry was telling me all this, I quite naturally was really charged up about this. And Dr. Filipov told him, he said, look, I need you to do a couple of things. I don't speak English all that well, but I read English well. So put everything in an email. Jerry had told him we would like to interview him on the show, and he said, I will do it. And he was excited. He was jazzed up about the fact that people around the world were already, on the other side of the planet, were already hearing what he said and excited about it. So he said, put it all in an email and send it to me. And in the future, here is my my personal cell phone number. Call me on this number, not at my office here at the Bulgarian Academy of Science.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Kevin, we've got a caller back on the line. Dan, welcome to the program. Is Dan out there? Hang on a second. Getting a little message. Nope, he's gone. Well, maybe he's out there listening. Well, so now we're going from an interview, or at least a story that was done about a statement that Dr. Filipov made, and then a follow-up with a phone call from the West, from Jerry. And during that phone call, 80% of it was confirmed, and 20% of it was a little bit backpedaling, possibly because of social pressures. The scientific community, even in the U.S., is as liberal and open as the Internet has allowed it to be, and as much of a celebrity status as some physicists have gained in this country, it is still brutal when it comes to peer review, and I imagine it's that way in Bulgaria as well. When a person realizes that communication with off-world races has gotten to the point where it's not necessarily nonchalant, but it's sophisticated enough and it's accepted enough in their own small community that perhaps the mainstream or the general public can bear a revelation or a disclosure on it. And yet immediately, within literally hours of such a disclosure, the pressure comes to bear on Dr. Filipov, and he is already backpedaling by phone. What happened in the email exchange?
Well, I will tell you, but let me add to what you just said. As Jerry was telling me about the evasiveness on a couple of the questions, I said to Jerry, you know, that something along the lines that, well, you know, he's already getting heat. And then you add to that he didn't really want to talk on the telephone in his office at the Bulgarian Academy of Science. He wanted to use his personal cell phone for these conversations. You put two and two together, and, you know, I think he was already a little bit nervous that maybe his phone lines were compromised and that he was getting some heat. All right, so Jerry had told me that Dr. Filipov wanted all of this in an email, so I speak and read Serbian and Macedonian. Bulgarian is, if you take Serbian and Macedonian and a little bit of Russian, put them in a blender and mix it up, you sort of come out with Bulgarian. So it kind of works like if you were speaking to someone who speaks Irish with a very strong accent, you would get the gist of what they say, but you would not understand every word. And so I speak Serbian and Macedonian. I can make it in Bulgaria. But it would be sort of that situation. Nevertheless, I do read the Bulgarian, it's the Cyrillic alphabet, which people who have seen Russian writing know that, you know, like you have a backwards R and a backwards N. But the backwards R is not an R at all. It makes the sound ya. But anyway, I read that. So I decided that I would be the one to write the email. I wrote the email in Bulgarian, partly, and part of it in English, and sent it to Dr. Filipov. Well, within 24 hours, and I said to Jerry, I said, now, Jerry, if somebody is going to get to him, we'll know it within 48 hours. Well, within 24 hours, I heard back from Dr. Filipov. And it didn't even sound like it had been written by the same guy that Jerry had talked to. It did not address any of the issues related. I was inviting him to be a guest on the show. It didn't mention that. It didn't address that. It completely ignored that. And yet to Jerry, he had said, I will do it. So the tone of the email that I got, ostensibly from Dr. Filipov, the tone of it sounded like a completely different person, and it just sort of downplayed everything and said, well, we're just looking at some crop circles and interpreting crop circles. That isn't what he had said to Jerry, and that isn't what he said to the press. He said to the press, and I quote, aliens live on Earth and are in constant communication and interaction with us.
Wow.
Very direct, but that isn't the tone of the email that I got back from him.
We have listeners who are writing in now and asking us at least the nature of the communication from the aliens. If we're in constant communications with them, it connotes that there's two-way communication. We're not just, you know, sharing recipes and musical compositions with the aliens. They're telling us some things about their world, and I'm assuming, I guess this is a big assumption on my part, that the aliens actually have recently come from another world. They're not just born here as humans, but they're aliens inside. These are actual alien races that have moved here and are operating here.
Well, that's my understanding of it. As far as the nature of the communications, that's part of what we wanted to talk with him about further. He did not want to talk in detail on that telephone. And ask us to call
on his personal cell phone.
No,
did he come back and say, you know, this is what they are saying, this is what they're talking about?
No. Well, oh yes, in the news report, it was kind of interesting. In the news report, it says that these aliens are not hostile to us in any way. They would like to be able to help us, but unfortunately, due to our lack of evolution and development, we're unable to conduct any coherent form of conversation. They want to help us, but the problem is we don't know what to ask them once a contact is established. But now,
yeah, I can see that. Sort of like a fourth grader walking into a senior physicist lecture and trying to formulate a meaningful question for them.
Yeah. Yeah. He's saying they are in constant communications with us, but we can't carry on much of a conversation because we don't even know what to ask. But as far as any further details, we were not able to get those because he didn't want to speak in detail on that telephone. So he said, send it to me in an email, and then call me tomorrow on this private cell phone, and we will talk further in private. Brooks, up until 2 o'clock this morning, we have been trying to call him on that cell phone, and no one answers. Now, we have gotten a report out of Bulgaria that there is a move underway to try and force his resignation. And I don't know whether he is the one who responded to my email or whether he had government assistance in responding to email.
Sure. The official office of answering emails. Yeah, we probably have just such an office as well. Well, I'm not an astrophysicist. My specialty is in instrumental analysis, which means I know how to use various instruments and spectrometers for precise measurements. Physics is one of those sciences full of little specialties, and crossing over from one specialty to another is not as easy as it sounds. You can read about it, but it takes years of lab work to put some empirical data behind the book work in order to make sense of it so that you can speak authoritatively. Now, that doesn't mean we don't know stuff, but I can tell you, Kevin, between you and I guarantee you we could formulate 30 meaningful questions for the aliens.
Well, I would think so. But then again, if we back off and think about it, they would be meaningful for us. But in the context of how they think and what they know, it might seem like pablum.
Yeah, I understand, but still, I would want to know how far away it was that they traveled to get here, and did they just jump in a titanium can and, fly in front of an ion beam to get here, or were they able to dimensionally jump, or were they able to travel hyperluminally, or, these are questions that we would ask right away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is important for people to understand how heavy this story is. And that is, if you don't mind, I want to just share with you just a little bit of this guy's CV. Is that all right with you?
Oh, yeah, let's do that. I mean, we talk about various guests like Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who's the last man to walk on the moon. That there are only 12 men that did it. That's a pretty exclusive fraternity. And yeah, he has been coming out of late and being very vocal about disclosure on several levels, not just the UFOs, but also our own space activity, which the common folk do not know about. And yet, even with that CV, even with that history behind him, he is being obfuscated in our own press. Sure. So, you know, let's go ahead and hear, you know, how long Dr. Filipov has been working at this, what kind of CV he's accumulated. This does not come easy. You know, Bulgaria is not a third world country. It is one of the leading countries in space technology. Most of the technology that goes into space is built by Germans and Bulgarians.
Well, you're correct. All right, first of all, let's talk about his degrees. It goes all the way back into high school. He went to a high school which from 67 to 1970 was the national, it is the National Physical and Mathematical Gymnasium. Now, gymnasium in the Slavic languages is equivalent to our high school. 1970 to 77, physical faculty of the Moscow State University and Sternberg State Astronomical Institute with a diploma thesis in non-stationary disk accretion of strongly magnetized neutron stars. In 1978 to 83, Space Research Institute at the Soviet Academy of Sciences and physical faculty of the Moscow State University, postgraduate research under the leadership of academician Zeldovich, and then candidate of physical and mathematical sciences with thesis defended on non-stationary disk accretion. In their language, when it says candidate, it's our equivalent of doctorate.
Mm-hmm.
And so a candidate with a thesis defended is... That's what we refer to as doctor.
Correct.
Now, his positions, 1983, so this is the year he got his doctorate degree, 1983 to 87, he was head of the High Energy Astrophysical Group at the Central Laboratory for Space Research. Since 1988, he's been the head of Space Astronomy Division and High Energy Astrophysical Department at Space Research Institute. 1988 to 1990, Deputy Director of Space Research Institute. 1990 until present, Vice President of the Scientific Council at the Space Research Institute. And since 1995, Vice Director of Sciences of the Space Research Institute.
Wow. Now, these aren't just, you know, online organizations that you can belong to and get a T-shirt and a baseball cap. He is in the leadership of it. He rose to the leadership and serves in executive status in these organizations. And his work is obviously well-respected and well-peer-reviewed. Why would his recent statements in the press be so hard to take seriously by the profession, by his professional colleagues?
Well, you know Stanton Friedman. He has a phrase that he uses. He's more polite than I am. He talks about fossilized physicists, and I talk about intellectual mudsuckers. Establishment science is in the business of defending the status quo. They have doctorates written and textbooks out and income dependent upon the status quo being correct because they are the ones who wrote the status quo. And so they defend it, and they defend it at all costs, including destruction of the reputations of and careers of other scientists. I know that you surely have seen that sort of thing happen right here in the United States, and it happens the world over. But these people, these status quo scientists, their batting average is that they are wrong almost 100% of the time. These are the people that told us the earth is flat. These are the people that laughed at the nuns and midwives in the hospitals because the nuns and midwives were washing their hands between working with different patients. They laughed at them. Meanwhile, their nasty hands were killing their patients. These are the people that told us there were no planets. planets outside of our solar system. This was a unique place. Right up till 1995. Well, since 1995, we have now discovered some 400 exoplanets.
Right,
and the list just goes on and on. They're wrong almost every time.
Right, right. And it's new discoveries that rewrite the fables of old, but only after repeated pounding against the granite ceiling. Paper after paper, discovery after discovery is thrown aside because it does not fit the status quo. We often chide this, calling it the religiosity of science, that we have high priests in the world of science just like religions do, and they won't let the true spirituality reach the people because it conflicts with the tradition of the religion. And now, I'm going to draw a parallel here. You know, even Jesus was not accepted in his day, traveling and teaching. The only thing that people were really interested in is, what's in it for me? Can I get healed today? If I can get close enough to him, maybe I can get healed. You know, all that stuff about self-empowerment and, you know, doing as God does. I don't really go for that stuff, but I want to get healed. So if you'll just get me in proximity of him, I think I can be healed. And maybe that's what science is doing today as well. But I assume from this news release and from Filipov's passion that he was first person involved in these alien human communications. This was not something that was hearsay. It wasn't something that was talked about in the cafeteria. He decided he was close enough to retiring. He might as well go out with a massive book signing. This is something that he participated in. Is that the impression that you get?
Yeah, it's not only the impression. He said that he was involved in the communications. But let me also say this. Filipov became, when he was talking with Jerry, became very passionate. Jerry said he got to a point where he was almost yelling into the phone. Dr. Filipov was. And Dr. Filipov said to Jerry, he said, "It is my duty." He said, "I am the top physicist in my country. It is my duty to let the world know."
Well, now he's driven by duty, and it's not something that he overheard at the water cooler. This is something that he participated in. Now, there are some efforts that humans make on a regular basis with limited funding, of course. One of those efforts is called SETI. That's the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. This is an ongoing bombardment of the cosmos with what we think are organized radio signals with a basic come and visit us, we're a peaceful people kind of mission, kind of message. Is it working? Is that why they're here?
No, Dr. Filipov said that it's not likely that any of our current radar equipment or radio telescopes would be effective in tracking extraterrestrial life. He said that the extraterrestrials communicate almost entirely, and that's not entirely, but almost entirely, via telepathy. Now, let me throw this into the mix. Now, I'm holding the original article, the English translation of the original article,
okay,
which I think was in the material that I sent you.
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay. And this article, in the second paragraph, is where it says, "It was even claimed that some alien species were present during a media statement in which they had answered more than 30 questions put forward by Bulgarian Academy of Science personnel." That's in the article, And if you have it, or if you have it in front of you, let me just ask, am I misstating that in any way, or is that exactly the quote?
No, the one that I have is his quote, "We sent the aliens 30 questions about global problems," said Filipov, who was vague about how he actually conveyed the queries, and the quote continues,
okay,
now we have some answers.
In the material that I sent, you should have a copy of the headline is BAS official, :, aliens are among us.
I've got that. Okay.
Yeah, that second paragraph.
Right. Lukasar Filipov, deputy head of the Space Exploration Department within
right
the BAS.
Right up above that.
Oh, in yellow.
It
was even claimed that some alien species were present during a media statement. Now, media statement, does that mean for the newspapers or for scientific media, or their own science journals?
Yeah, see, we don't know. But what I wanted to point out is you will not find that statement in any subsequent news reports. All subsequent news reports have omitted this. And the subsequent
news reports play it down. That's the work of an all-powerful editor somewhere.
Yeah. The subsequent news reports play it down, and they say, well, they are Filipov and his group. Let me just read this one. This is published 3 days later, and it says, he said, that would be Filipov, said, the center's researchers were analyzing 150 crop circles from around the world, which they believe answer the questions. That isn't what the original report said, and that isn't the way Filipov talked to us on the phone.
Right. Well, it definitely sounds like editors and coaches are at work here. One of the quotes, and this is at the 12:06 p.m. email received from a listener, evidently he found some more on the Filipov story. There's a quote at the bottom of this. It says, the people in Bulgaria are frightened. They don't understand this. You must understand that this is a very complicated situation. You know, I don't think that the Bulgarian people are frightened of contact with aliens. I know that Americans are not. I can assure you that and we have an open invitation here, and you do as well on your program. Any alien that wants to come on the air and make a statement to the planet, we have an open microphone for them the whole time we're live. I know that.
Absolutely.
For a fact. And, you know, we might ask them some questions, of course, to qualify them. Of course, face-to-face is better. But me, more than you, I have a face for radio, so we don't really do face-to-face stuff here on this program. It's all done by microphone, and we try to paint the best picture we can just using our voices. But if there is an alien race out there who is first generation or second generation, whatever, on this planet, and they're working and living among us, and they want to get a message to the people, you have several venues that you can do that without fear. Because this program, X Squared Radio, and I know Kevin Smith's show as well, is a sanctuary for such communication. Because we are only dedicated toward getting the truth out there to the people. And if this is the venue, feel free to use it.
And according to Filipov, they are out here. Reading from that original article, the BAS official, : aliens are among us. Let me read this paragraph, folks. Lukasar Filipov, and it's actually, they have it translated Lukasar. It's not, it's Lukasar, L-A. Lukasar Filipov, deputy head of the Space Exploration Department within the BAS, told reporters that, quote, they, the aliens, are here right now among us. He said, end quote. He said that although there is little awareness awareness of their presence, they are conducting surveillance and research on Earth. So,
surveillance for who? I mean, are they conducting surveillance of their own, for their own use here on this planet, or surveillance for off-world or orbiting counterparts?
Who knows? Who knows? And now, the link to Filipov that we had is dead. We cannot get in touch with him. We cannot, we've sent email that isn't being returned, it's not being replied to. We've sent, we've made telephone calls, and he was very enthusiastic in the telephone conversation, very enthusiastic about wanting to be on my radio program and get this message to the world. Within 24 hours, as far as we are concerned, he's disappeared. Now, I'm not saying that he has, in fact, disappeared. He may still be showing up at his office every day, but he's not answering on his cell phone, and he's not answering on his office phone.
Hmm. Well, that could be because, well, I'm sure they don't celebrate Thanksgiving over there, but it could be because, you know, he's busy or he's lecturing or something like that. But it could also be because he has been told by his department, you stay off the phone and you let the story die with the batteries of the cameras that once covered it, and it will go away and no one will ever think a thing about it.
Well, you need to know also that apparently it has sparked a really hot, hostile conversation between the Minister of Finance of Bulgaria and the President of Bulgaria. It has been reported that in their discussions of funding for the Bulgarian Academy of Science, it broke out into really hostile conversation in which the Minister of Finance used, and I quote, offensive language. You know, apparently this set off a tsunami in Bulgaria.
Well, you know, our NASA has not been unlike that at all. I mean, we were sitting there with two completely built, funded, operational launch engines in 1972-73, and all of a sudden, without warning, the United States ends its lunar program overnight. Just like that, even though it had two fully funded, fully manned, fully fueled launch engines ready to go, and it was well known throughout the world, well accepted, that the country that controls the moon would control Earth, and China and Russia had active lunar programs underway. But for some reason, the United States unilaterally, all of a sudden, without warning, decides to stop its lunar program. Earlier last year, we had heard from President Bush that the United States was returning to the moon in full force with manned missions by 2020. And yet, this year, we hear from Obama that not only will there be no manned missions to the moon, there will be no manned missions launched from the United States at all. We will hitchhike with the Russians if we're going anywhere in space. Now, that's a complete 180-degree downturn in human activity in space sponsored by the United States of America. It doesn't sound like that the Minister of Finance in the United States is very fond of NASA either.
Well, what they're saying, this committee, this panel that did a review of NASA's missions and their budget, what they're saying is there's not enough money to do the moon missions. And what I have said repeatedly on my show, and I think probably even when you were on the show, last time I may have made this statement, NASA gets $17 billion. $17 billion.
That's not much.
With that, they're supposed to explore the universe.
Yeah, that isn't right. Much, people. That's less than New York City gets to take care of the trash.
Right. Well, do you know how much money you have and I have spent to rebuild Iraqi schools, roads, and water systems?
Oh, I bet it's a darn sight more than $17
billion. $59
billion. Oh, my gosh. And we're not even
now,
there yet.
You know, if we have the money to rebuild schools, roads, and water systems in a country that doesn't even like us, what's the deal with $17 billion for NASA? That is an atrocity. NASA has a universe to explore. Now,
treasures to bring back, because the things that they discover in creating this technology, we benefit from through free technology exchange. Hang on a second, Kevin. Before we get out of this hour, let's have Mark from Ohio tell us what's on his mind. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Hi, Dr. Agnew. I got a few questions for Kevin. It's kind of interesting having you both on the same radio show. I listen to both of you guys pretty often. Kevin, do you believe the Bulgarian scientist's life is in danger right now?
Well, let me tell you, I don't know. I myself, having been arrested at the Bulgarian border by a corrupt cop, held illegally for 4.5 hours before he finally got scared enough and sweaty enough that he decided to turn me loose. It is entirely possible. While they are not actually a communist country, they still have many of the old communist ways. So is his life in danger? Possibly. It's not too likely, but what is more likely is that he's being re-educated.
Have you considered taking this information to, I don't know, Stephen Bassett or Project Camelot or Coast to Coast or some other media outlet that might have an even bigger audience?
We're the number one UFO paranormal talk show on the planet. Coast to Coast is bigger here. We're bigger worldwide. We're in over, 140 countries now.
Between the two of us, we have an audience way bigger.
I'm sorry, Brooks?
Well, I was going to say, between the Kevin Smith Show and X Squared Radio, our audience dwarfs Coast to Coast. They have 695 AM radio stations. We access more than 100 million computers worldwide.
Wow. Do you believe that these ETs are basically human appearing? It sounds like they probably would have to be.
And they must be, because he says they're here among us now, and you don't even realize it. You don't recognize them. I would say yeah.
What are your next steps in looking into this story? Do you have any other plans or?
Yes, and I hope you will forgive me for saying I'm going to keep those cards very, very close to my vest, because they won't work if it's known ahead of time what I plan to do.
Well, that makes perfect sense, and thanks, Kevin, and thanks, Dr. Agnew. This is a really interesting show. I hope that this information really gets out, because this is close to disclosure, and it's just incredible, really.
Well, it really is. The only thing missing are the cameras, and if we could actually have film of this, because that's the way most people experience this kind of information. Yes, it's nice to hear on the radio. We're certainly two of the credible paranormal talk radio hosts on the planet today. And we cover it from different aspects. Kevin is a professional investigator, and he has a huge amount of cross-thought provided to him by the many, many hosts, five times more hosts than we have on this program. We're 1 3-hour program a week, but we cover things, you know, in an in-depth scientific way. and we try to get at the truth, and that's what attracts our listeners globally, is they really want to crack through what you might see on Fox News or what you might even see on the Discovery or History Channel, a la animation, for entertainment purposes. But people come here, you know, to get through the surface and find out what's going on and really get at the scientific truth of it. We're at the end of our first hour, so we'll take a quick 2.5 minute break, let you get a drink, and we'll be right back with more Kevin Smith after this. Don't go away.
Well, I dreamed I saw the knights in armor come, saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Looking Mother Nature on the run in the 21st century. Well, I was lying in a burned up basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie.
Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship fly in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one.
All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun.
The Alice Band singing After the Gold Rush, Neil Young's song. And just thought it was apropos that we should play that. By the way, as you're preparing for Christmas, it means different things to different people, but surely it is one of the most commercial seasons on the planet. Lots of companies do about 60% of their business during the 2 weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And one of the hard things to do is to find the right gift for the right person. I understand that more than anyone, but I can tell you, the gift that will continue to give, and it will be handed down from generation to generation, are books. And if you are thinking about 2012, if you've seen the movie and you're confused and you're looking for answers, trying to figure out why 2012 is significant, I want to make a suggestion. I think you should pick up a trilogy of The Ark of Millions of Years. Yes, I'm the co-author, and it could be a shameless plug, but it really isn't. If you really want to get all of the information in a mere 1,500 pages spread over three books, and have some interesting reading, and also some interesting looking. You know, it's no fun to pick up those big, thick 500-page books at Barnes & Noble and flash through them and not see any photographs. There's no pictures, no artwork. There are over 300 drawings, photographs, pictures, diagrams in the three books. And right now there is a special pricing on it. If you go to arkofmillionsofyears.com, that's A-R-K, like Noah's Ark, you can pick up all three books for a special shipping price. And also, you will be sent, in the purchase of that, the audio version of Volumes 1 and 2 for free in your PayPal receipt. So if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read them for you. So you can have the books on your shelf. You can hand them to your kids and your grandkids and talk about the phenomenon that is and was 2012. Don't succumb to the hype. You are far more empowered than you can imagine. Find out what the ancients say about it and what modern scientists are saying about it as well. I also wanted to give you a brief update on the Inner Earth Expedition. You know, we've been working on this for 3 years, and one of the things that frustrates us the most in trying to put this together is the amount of money that it takes to conduct this expedition. Each year, what we have tried to do is set our sights on the following year, thinking, well, we have 6 or 7 months. Surely we can raise the $2 million it takes to charter the ship. And, of course, we've received thousands, maybe tens of thousands of emails over the last 3 years. Lots and lots of support. Lots and lots of, I'm going to say, fans out there, enthusiasts out there, and believers. And we realize that 1 year is not enough time to put together these sites. We set our sights on 2007, 2008. Now, the summer of 2009 is gone, and we're looking at 2010, and we realize that time is accelerating. Things are going too quickly. We're in precarious financial times, and it is difficult to put together such short-sightedness. And in releasing this, and in meditating on this, and in talking it over as a group, we realize that the significance of the expedition lies with the year 2012. And so we have to make this trip during the summer because it is above the Arctic Circle, and once you hit the latter part of August, the early parts of September, ice begins to reform. And all it takes is one Arctic blast, and I can tell you 10,000 square miles of ice per day can form. Far too quick for even the swiftest, most powerful icebreakers to overcome. So the trip must be in July or August, well before the December 2012 date. Now, don't you think it would be fitting to try to do a summer solstice 2012 above the Arctic Circle? Yes, I can feel that resonating with you already. And so you're the first to hear it tonight, here on X Squared Radio, the last day of November 2009, that the expedition is being set for the summer of 2012. Our websites will reflect that, but you are the first to hear it. Any comments on it, you can call in, you can write in, you can communicate with us through Skype, send us a text message, or call in if you like. Our guest tonight, Kevin Smith from The Kevin Smith Show. And we are discussing an absolutely stunning revelation from the Bulgarian Academy of Science, and specifically Lakhazar Filipov. And I'm not so good at pronouncing the names, but Kevin is. And we'll be back in 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio. Don't go away. The lid's coming off. The science of space travel has always fascinated the free world, and the unfree world for that matter. We have launched rockets into it, we have sailed satellites into it, we have mastered bouncing television signals and cell phone signals and looking at our weather all from space. But we are fledglings, and now we are in the company of Masters. The question is, are we ready to hear what they have to say? Are we ready even to admit that some of the Masters are here among us? But evidently, and I mean with a capital E, evidently, not the common man on the street, far from it. Highly decorated, highly educated, highly officed Bulgarian Academy of Science official Dr. Filipov has come forward saying that open communication has been going on with alien races, which are here among us. This hour, we're going to talk about the implications of what it means to have another sentient race on the planet besides humans. Welcome back to the program, Kevin.
Well, I'm glad to still be here.
Well, you know, when we talk about the implications of this, besides the earth-shattering press that someone decorated and not retired, not emeritus, but acting in the leadership roles of the Bulgarian equivalent of NASA, is coming out and saying that aliens are living among us and we are interacting with them, and we had a chance to pose 30 questions to them. And we've had some of our listeners text in and even write in or even call in asking what questions were asked and what answers might have been given. And I understand that that information is not forthcoming, at least with the information that you have so far. But let's talk about the implications of what it means to have at least one, maybe more, alien races living here on this planet. First of all, they probably didn't come from our solar system. I would gather that, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes. Now, that's speculation on my part. I can't say for sure, but I would speculate that they are not in this solar system, or not from this solar system. They're in it now, but not from it.
Well, one of the things that we're realizing as of the launch of the Kepler mission is that Earth isn't, although rare, as unique as we once thought. There are now several hundred what are known as, to Star Trek fans, as M-class planets out there. We don't know if there's life on them or not, but spectrographically, we've been able to find them through advanced techniques not only from Earth, but also from space-based probes sent out, not the least of which is Kepler. So the idea that Earth has been found, Earth has been discovered, traveled to, and now colonized, or at least in a forward position, peopled with a small amount of alien races that are now living here. And by the way, before we get to my question, Dan is back, and we really want to hear his question. Dan, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me well right now?
Oh, yes, we can hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I tried to call actually twice before, and something was wrong with the line. But anyway, yeah, you were talking about the Hollow Earth, Inner Earth expedition a second ago, and you said if anybody had a question, they can call in. So it is on that topic. I'm just wondering if that's okay for me to ask a question about that?
Of course. Go ahead.
All right, yeah, so I was just wondering, I read a book a while back about the Hollow Earth, and I pretty much got the idea of how the theory works and things like that, how the geology would work just a little bit. And basically, I'm just wondering, I know what happens if you try to sail a ship into that opening. Basically, you're just going to be gravitationally attracted to the crust of the Earth, and you're going to sail like kind of right into the opening, and then you're going to start sailing kind of like on the bottom of the crust when you're on the inside of the Earth. Is that correct?
That is the theory,
yes.
If gravity centers in the crust, the way many hollow Earth theories maintain, then the ocean actually hugs the crust around the curvature of this hole through the opening and then on the inside of the crust.
Okay, so my question would be this. Now, if if there is the center, the hole, like at the center of the pool or, you know, around that area, wherever it is, and gravity actually centers in the crust, like what you're talking about and what the theory talks about and stuff like that. Say you go and you drop something into that hole at the North Pole. what's going to happen. Now, obviously, if there is like an inner sun, which they call it, it's not really a sun, but whatever that material is, it's not going, the ball would not drop down into that inner sun. So what would it do? Would it kind of like suck to one of the sides of the crust? Do you kind of see what I'm saying?
It's sort of like when you're standing on a North Pole, which way are you facing? South. Everywhere you look is south. So if you were to drop something at the absolute epicenter of this hole, where it would be equidistant from at least the gravitational center on all sides, it should drop straight through, or it may be suspended there, hard to tell. There are lots of examples of solid bodies that are maintained inside gravitational fields. That's how we isolate antimatter. That's how we isolate photons when we examine their spin. We use electron capture detectors to hold electrons in stasis in a magnetic field. So it's possible it could just sit there. I'm not exactly sure if you could find the absolute epicenter, but I can tell you that if you're sailing along on the ocean, you're probably never going to be able to detect this curvature unless you're sailing next to another vessel, say, 10 miles away. Beyond that, the curvature of the Earth is going to put it beyond sight, so you're not going to be able to see it. This is one of the phenomenons that was often recorded in maritime history, two ships sailing side by side, which they often did just for safety, if for nothing else, pirates, but also in case one of the ships had some kind of problem with high seas, the other ship could come to its rescue, or at least save its passengers as the ship was going down. But oftentimes what happened is one ship disappeared from sight from the other ship, and then a few hours later, or even later in the day, the ship reappeared exactly the same distance as it originally was. Now, this has been known, or at least recorded, as the oceanic depression. It is a place where sea level is no longer sea level. Even the modern Navy is aware of this. I spoke to a retired admiral who said that they're aware of it. They're not really sure why it happens. They believe it's from high areas of gravity on the planet that pull the ocean down lower. And I proposed the theory to him that perhaps it was actually low gravity, and it was the high gravity around this low gravity spot that pulls the ocean away from that low gravity spot, and that's why it sinks down, which he admitted that it very well could be a possibility. We do know that our magnetic field around the Earth fluctuates and ebbs and flows, sort of like an amoeba, but we're unaware that gravitational forces actually change that much from area to area. At least we have not mapped it like that. We just don't have a way to measure gravity in that sense. So it is something that's going to have to be mapped with a precision gyroscope. And that's going to take actually sailing the sea and mapping the curvature of the Earth.
I see. All right. So that actually kind of sort of answers the second real fast question that I had for you. And it was this, but I'm still going to go ahead and ask it anyway. I was basically just wondering, instead of actually sailing a ship into the opening like you're planning on doing in 2012, you're saying now, what about actually flying there or flying close to there? I know you were talking about how you can't get close enough because it's incredibly dangerous because you got to fly at like a specific altitude to actually go or something like that.
Well, evidently it's been done by Admiral Byrd.
Admiral Byrd, yeah.
At 2,500 feet, which is why he's an aviation hero and not a statistic. But we cannot find a pilot to fly that low. The lowest that we could find a pilot to fly was 17,000 feet, and that was in a 737 flying at 500 miles an hour.
So everybody's just too scared to do that then, huh?
I'm not exactly sure if it's fear. I just tell you that it's aviation protocol that you don't fly over the open sea under 17,000 feet. It's just not done. Your first mistake is your last. So, the range is such that this is so far out from the Siberian islands, it would take an untold amount of FAA and global aircraft traffic management to be able to fly this particular route. It's just not flown. It's like dark when it comes to flyover country. There are no navigational aids out there. You are on your own. And it just is not risked. So the way to do it is with an icebreaker that has the clearance to sail those seas, which I'm afraid only exists in Russia.
All right, so what about a probe, though? I was kind of thinking about that. I mean, if you could get kind of like a little bit close, not necessarily get into the danger zone, but then kind of like send out a probe or something like that to go and take a look at it. I mean, would that be, you know,
well,
like
the nature of our experiment is to get close, to get in proximity of it, and then to put out the proper consciousness. I know that sounds so unscientific, but it actually is scientific because all of the lore that we've been able to read about this, and keep in mind there are no regular missions to this area. It's never been seen by human eyes before, not from the ocean. It just has been covered in ice, you know, for over 200,000 years, and it opened up in 2007, and it's becoming increasingly less accessible. Each winter, the ice rethickens, and it's going to be impassable again in the next few years. And certainly when the Captain Kolibnikov is retired in 2012, that's its last year at sea, there will be no ships left that can make this voyage.
Okay, so what about global warming? I know you were talking about, I think I heard you mention that either on the Coast to Coast program or possibly on your program. But you were talking about one of the key reasons, maybe not the entire reason, but one of the key reasons why you're actually able to go to the North Pole in this ship in the first place is because of global warming and some of the receding of the ice caps and stuff like that.
That's so correct. That in combination with a very rare wind that was blowing in 2007, it actually broke away a quasi-continent-sized piece of ice, which opened up the Northwest Passage for the first time in recorded history. And that passage has not frozen back over. Now, that could be because the ocean is too warm, and it could be just because of the rerouting of the jet stream since 2007. But that could change any time, and it could refreeze and be inaccessible again.
All right, so what about the, you were talking about, you mentioned something like right at the beginning of the show where there was some sort of emails released. There was some sort of scandal with some of the people that were actually promoting the global warming idea and stuff like that.
Yes, the actual database was hacked and the emails were made public. And what we realized in looking at this is that the people that were purporting the global warming, shall we call it climate change story, amongst themselves were saying, you know, something's wrong here because the data is not supporting what we're telling the public. The argument that we're making is now no longer supported by the data that we're recovering, not since 1999. However, there are scientists who are not considered global warming enthusiasts who are saying this is merely a lull. The global warming will return, and it will return in earnest as soon as the sun gets down to business and begins its solar flare activity, which is expected, although it hasn't made its showing yet. If it does, it may come back with a vengeance, and we could have serious problem.
Okay, so you're talking about like the next solar cycle. But the whole issue with those people and the emails and stuff like that, I kind of heard that somebody talking about somewhere or something before on your show. The whole issue with them is they're trying to promote the idea of like man-made global warming.
But yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Are you kind of on the? Are you kind of saying yes? You know, global warming's true, but it's made by the sun, or do you believe in the man-made theory as well?
Well, both. The global warming is caused by the sun. All the planets in the solar system are warming.
Yeah, it makes sense.
There could be no question about that. The reason that we're concerned in the scientific community is because man's activity might breach the margin of safety from these what might be normal cycles of the Earth warming and then cooling again, man's activities might exceed the margin of safety for recovering from that without cataclysmic change unavoidably destroying the atmosphere of the Earth. For instance, underneath the ocean, very cold and under a lot of pressure, is another ocean made of liquid methane. If that ocean were to go gaseous and come up through a warm ocean into our atmosphere, life as we know it would be over. We would have to live inside of artificial environments or go forth with gas masks, because the methane in the air would be such that you'd die of a heart attack in a matter of moments.
I see. Wow. All right, sir. I kind of feel like I'm interrupting your discussion with Kevin here, so I do apologize. But you did tell me to call in. You told anybody to call in with questions about the expedition, so that's just what I was doing.
And, perfect.
I thank you for answering my questions, Brooks. Appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime. Thank you for the call. All right, so Kevin, getting back to the real import of this stunning revelation that there are alien races here, operational, doing surveillance and interacting with, at least observing our somewhat slowly evolving race, is that they're here and they're walking on the surface of our world, which means the world they came from, they're able to walk on the surface of it, or they have been able to make the inside of their planet habitable enough and similar enough to our environment that they can survive in both places. Now, that is really stunning to have revealed to us that somewhere out there in the darkness of space is a place where humans from this world can survive.
Well, I think that there are probably a great many places out there where humans can survive. I don't think that we are in possession, we the public, are in possession of the real facts concerning most of our solar system. We know from Wernher von Braun, as well as from astronauts, that the zero point where Earth's gravity turns loose of the capsule and the moon's gravity takes over is much further away from the moon than the official statement given us by NASA. And what that means is that the moon's gravity is not 1/6 of Earth's. I've had several scientists on this show, on my show, who have said that using what Wernher von Braun said and confirmed by the astronauts, that the gravity on the moon is actually 2/3 of Earth's gravity.
Well, that's very interesting.
You've got the same cloud, the same fog of information when you deal with Mars. And let me give you one example. They say that the official statement is that the atmospheric pressure on Mars at the surface is only 0.7. In other words, 0.007 of Earth's atmospheric pressure. In other words, it's not even 1%.
So that's somewhat less than it would be standing on the top of Mount Everest.
It'd be a lot less. If you were at 40,000 feet, the average PSI A at 40,000 feet is 2.93. Okay, and on Mars they're saying it's 0.7.
Wow.
All right. Nevertheless, NASA had a project to build an airplane that they could fly remotely on Mars. An airplane, you know, wings.
Well, we know parachutes work on Mars.
The way it flies is there has to be sufficient
sufficient airflow over the wings to create lift under the wings. And how do you do that with less than 1% of the atmospheric pressure of the surface of the Earth? How do you do that?
Well, we know the parachutes work on Mars. That's the way we successfully landed the last few probes. So there is enough, you know, higher atmosphere density to support parachutes. And if that's the case, then it's just a matter of overcoming the weight of the craft with the surface area of the wing.
Well, here's a simple equation. The physics of flight for any airplane, if you take that same airplane to Mars, according to NASA, the gravity on Mars is 38% of the gravity of Earth. So it will only weigh 38%. The reduction in air atmospheric pressure has got to be proportional in order for that to fly.
Or it's got to fly a lot faster, because according to Bernoulli's principle, it's the speed of the air over the top of the wing that reduces the pressure and allows the pressure underneath the wing of the slow-moving air to push the plane up.
Well, that's true, but if you look at their models all have props. They're pusher props on the back of the plane.
Wow.
All right, now, 38% gravity. You've got to have 38% of the air pressure. It's got to be proportional in order for that airplane to fly.
Mm.
They say that the atmospheric pressure at the surface is so low that there can be no liquid water at the surface, because as ice melts, the atmospheric pressure being so low, it turns to vapor immediately.
Yeah, it sublimates.
There is no liquid state. Well, there's a problem with that. It's called the Phoenix Lander. The Phoenix Lander took pictures all around itself near the North Ice Cap on Mars. And in some of those pictures, the camera was pointed at one of the legs of the Phoenix Lander. And in those pictures, you see little drops of water, actually big drops of water, on those legs, and it shot a series of pictures over time, so you can see that these things form, and then they move and drip. And the chief scientist of that project, Dr. Smith, Peter Smith, down in Tucson, said that is liquid water. Now, you can't get more surface than on the leg of the Phoenix Lander that's sitting right on the ground on Mars, and right there at the ground level, there are water drops.
Well, so, I was recently speaking with Andy Basciago, which many of you may know was recently on Coast to Coast. I spoke to him for 7 hours in one sitting in July of this year. And he revealed to us, and he's also been on this program, a project called Project Pegasus, where the United States in the early 70s was routinely running teleportation missions between the Earth and Mars. And Andy reports that the atmosphere on Mars is thin but breathable. You will suffer from oxygen deprivation over time, that being several hours, but with taking Diamox and shots of oxygen from time to time, you can survive for extended periods of time. Now, I've traveled to Tibet, and I've been as high as 18,500 feet, and I can tell you it's very difficult breathing, but you can acclimate to it. If what Kevin is telling us is accurate, at least what's being reported by those at Caltech running the Phoenix Lander, or at least the Texas source, is true. Liquid water has a partial pressure that does not allow it to exist in a vacuum. So therefore, you must have enough atmospheric pressure to overcome the partial pressure of water so that water can remain liquid at temperatures above 0 degrees Celsius. Otherwise, it'll go straight to gas, just as Kevin is saying. It's called freeze drying. That being the case, it looks like the empirical data is refuting the theory.
Well, it is. Look, back in 1976, we had a mission to Mars. It was the Viking lander. And it scooped up some soil, and it ran several different types of experiments. One experiment verified processes, but very quickly NASA rushed to say, oh, that was an error. They scooped up some more soil, put it in a different experiment, different process, and didn't find any biological signs, but then that experiment was not designed to find that. And so there's no surprise that it didn't. However, Dr. Harold Klein, who was the chief biological science officer, I guess you could say, for that mission, said, and I have the clip of him saying it. He said, what we have found there in that soil is 15, no, not in that soil. What we have found there is 15 times more oxygen in that atmosphere than we can account for from all known sources. Now, he actually said that. It's not 15% more, it's 15 times more. Well, Brooks, during the Phoenix lander mission, Dr. Peter Smith made the statement, you may remember this, it came out in the news. He said that soil there, the Martian soil, is just like the soil in your backyard. You could grow asparagus in it. Within hours, other NASA-related scientists came up with, oh, well, no, it's got perchlorate in it, and that would preclude any kind of life. Well, the day, the instant that hit the press, I did some research. First, I found perchlorate is one chlorine molecule with four
oxygens.
Oxygen. All right, so then I went to the TIGA test results. TIGA is the experiment that they tested the soil with. I went to the TIGA test results, and it shows a huge spike for oxygen, and not even a bubble, not a blip, not even a quaver for chlorine. So they didn't find perchlorate. They found lots of oxygen in Martian dirt. Furthermore, perchlorate exists naturally here on Earth in 27 states of the United States of America. The soil and or water has perchlorate in it from natural sources.
That's correct.
And it certainly and by the does way, not preclude life here.
And by the way, perchlorate is very reactive. So once you hydrate it, that is to say, once it rains on it, once you make mud out of it, perchlorate reacts readily with lots and lots of stuff. And don't be so afraid of chlorine, because you put it on your French fries.
Point is, there was no chlorine, and so to call it perchlorate is an outright lie. You have to have the chlorine in there in order for it to be perchlorate.
That's right, and the chlorine atom is twice as heavy as the oxygen atom, so it would show up in the molecular weight of perchlorate, it would show up at about 25% of the molecular weight of that molecule. So if it, in fact, was perchlorate, you would see a significant spike in the chlorine spectra.
But there isn't. And so, you know, why they are not telling us the truth, I don't know. I have suspicions. But the fact that they're telling us the truth is pretty easy to prove. So, back to the original discussion, I think that the possibility that there are humans, or human-like, humanoid beings living on other planets in the solar system is entirely possible, since we aren't being told the truth about the true conditions even on the moon.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And, well, don't forget about moons. You know, there are moons that have liquid water on them. It is well known that some of the rings that are found around some planets are actually from water fountains that are spewing out of the moons around those planets. So this is liquid water geysers that are you know, like Old Faithful from volcanic activity deep within, inside that moon, liquefying and spewing water vapor out into space, which is forming the rings around that planet.
Well, you're right, and I want to say this too, though. When we hear NASA say we're looking for life out there, and, you know, if we ever find any signs of life, we'll be shouting it from the housetops. I believe very strongly, and I think the evidence supports, they have found signs of life. Their own pictures show it, and I haven't heard any shouting from the rooftops. But one of the things they say is follow the water. Well, how ridiculous can you be? Water is necessary for a certain category of life on this planet. But we have life on this planet that if you expose it to water or expose it to oxygen, it will die.
Correct.
And it's living right here on this planet in our soil, deep in the soil. And who's to say that something like that isn't living on Mars? Now, you and I, and everyone listening to us, we gather oxygen out of the air. And we suck it into our lungs, and then we expel carbon dioxide. Okay. Well, fish have to have oxygen, but they'll die if you put them in air. They get oxygen by processing it out of water. The Martian soil is rich in oxygen by NASA's own accidental admissions. Who's to say there's not a life form living in that soil that processes oxygen out of that soil? And who's to say that all life forms need oxygen? We, as I say, we have life forms on this planet that die if you expose them to oxygen.
That's correct. There are actually bacteria that eat the lining out of fuel tanks. They live in JP4.
There you
go. Or Jet A.
There you go. So if we have life living on this planet that doesn't require oxygen, it requires other chemicals, other types of things in order to live, then who's to say you don't have life living on Titan where it's heavy with methane? If life happens, as scientists are very prone to say, life happens. Okay, if that happens, then it happens within the context of its location.
Sure.
The reason we breathe oxygen is because that's what's here on this planet.
Oh, we
and
we
oxygen,
often
of
say
course, is one of the most corrosive elements there is.
Oh yeah, even sulfuric acid, which is generated when volcanic gases come up through the ocean floor and come in contact with seawater. Even in these highly acidic environments, there are complex life forms that live right at that interface. In fact, that's the only place they live.
That's right. And so it would not be odd at all to me to find that there is life all over this solar system. They talk about Venus having a surface pressure that's something like 900 well, let's see, what is it? 1,000 times greater than Earth. And the temperature 980 degrees. So what? The life forms that you just talked about are living in superheated water where the pressure, the sea pressure, the water pressure, is probably something like 700 times more than what we experience out here on the surface. And there they are. It doesn't bother them.
Sure. We're talking one atmosphere of pressure for every 33 feet in depth of water. So if you go to 4,000 meters, which is about 12,000 feet deep on the Arctic floor, you could do some quick calculations and figure out how many atmospheres that is. It's a lot of pressure. We have often said on this program, and we say in defending a mission to explore the Arctic Circle for an opening into the inner Earth, if there is a void there inside the Earth, there will be life. It might be microbial, and it might be complex. We don't know, but there will be life there.
Well, I think life happens. And I think that it's just foolish. You know, the way NASA looks for life is they go out there and look for us. Well, we're here. And,
I've often thought that they're looking for old, abandoned Volkswagens out there. And that's their criteria for life. What really blows my mind is that a mere 250,000 miles away, in fact, you could get there quicker than you can get to the Philippines from here, we have a moon that is just begging for more human interaction. We need more soil digging. We need a moon base up there, interacting with the moon, listening to the seismic activity of the moon, doing deep core drilling, even 1,000 feet down, 2,000 feet down, we could learn so much about our nearest satellite. And we're not doing it. Like you mentioned in our first hour, a mere $17 billion a year for NASA is the municipal waste budget for New York. That's nothing.
Yeah.
If you were to take... just looking at Earth from outside isn't so difficult to do. Look at where we spend our money. If we were to take our military budget and let's just do something really radical and call everyone home and turn, as it were, our weapons into plowshares, take the military budget and turn it 100% into space exploration. For one thing, what do you think our quasi-enemies would do at that point? They know something we don't know. So should we really go to war, or should we also join the space race?
I think you're right. Even if we did that, if we took the entire military budget for 1 year, just 1 year, give it to NASA as a one-time appropriation and tell them, number one, stop messing around. Get on with this. Number two, stop lying. Tell the people the truth. If we did that, within 5 years, I am absolutely sure we would have found another Earth and would be there.
Yeah, there's no question in my mind. You can only do so much unmanned, and you can only do so much with a shoestring budget and a bunch of theories. You've got to build the stuff and fly it. And I might not categorically disagree with that. I think private industry and free enterprise is the way to enter space. NASA is too jaded and is looking at things. Right now there are, let's see, 38 active NASA missions. There are 64 active NASA programs in space. Some of them are satellites that were launched a long, long time ago. But there are 38 active programs being built to go and study something in space. that is what one university should be doing, not NASA. Now, to go to Washington is, I think everyone should do it once, at least once, and really witness the futility of trying to wrestle your way through the bureaucracies that are actually the government of this country. We're not talking about the political faces that you see on C-SPAN. That is a charade compared to what goes on in Washington. Those talking heads, those pontificating buffoons, are not our government. Our government is made up of layers and layers of bureaucracies who battle every day for the same checkbook, yours. And they are spending money like it is an unlimited supply. And you'll never know their names, you'll never know the lengths of their careers or their accomplishments. But they outlast presidents, they outlast senators, they outlast congressmen, and once a department is formed, it never, ever goes away. I promise you, you can find buggy whips in full production in Washington, D.C. right now.
Well, you're exactly right. And you know, it's a shame. It really is. But what's, you know, we're talking about the principal thing here that we're talking about tonight is the disclosure of the reality of extraterrestrial intelligent life. Okay. Now, I've said this, you've heard me say this. Washington, and I use that rather ambiguous term to refer to whoever and whatever and everyone involved in keeping the secrets about UFOs and extraterrestrials. Washington has a very small window of opportunity right now to come clean. If they don't, see, and the reason I say it's a small window is things like this Filipov story are popping up. Here is a guy you can't brush off, who said what he said, and even if he now is being forced to back off of it, he still said it, it still got out there, and we're talking about it. And so disclosure is happening. The dam is breaking. It's got cracks and holes all in it. So they can't keep it a secret much longer, and in fact, it's not a secret. It's just a bunch of people with their rear in the breeze, and all of us can see it. And they're still pretending that they're keeping a secret.
Well, it
but we
is.
We all know
it,
it anyway.
It is so funny.
So if they don't run around and get in front of everything and say, okay, folks, here's the deal. If they don't do that, then when the lid is really, officially, just blown away by perhaps a unambiguous, huge appearance of extraterrestrials, if that happens, everyone in this country will view those people as totally irrelevant. And once you're irrelevant, you're out of business. That means their future as a government is on the line with this topic.
Well, I totally agree with that. I think that the form of government that we as a planet have, that is to say, various peoples gathered around various banners with various heritages and histories of peace, warfare, religious differences, whatever, is not the way to run a planet. We are a planet of human beings. And if you ever get a chance to look at this planet from space, some of you have, some of you do in your remote viewing or your meditations, you realize it's a very small basket in which to claim all the human eggs lie. And to be wrestling over basically 2/7 of the surface area of this planet, and a lot of it is uninhabitable, deserts, mountains, things like that, is ridiculous. To be warring over dirt, to be warring over whether or not you believe in this god or that god, is primitive nigh unto rubbing two sticks together to make fire. We need to be a civilized people. And this kind of revelation, or should I say, this kind of disclosure, is the pathway to becoming an intelligent race. Yes, there are intelligent people on this planet, but as a race, we are primitive, warmongering hunter-gatherers compared to what we could be. And it is within our grasp. This generation, forget about 10,000 years of fighting over one oasis or another, or one star formation or another, or one religion or another, one skin color or another. It is within our grasp to realize the import of this stunning discovery, or should I say disclosure, that a leading, active, practicing, governing scientist has come out almost nonchalantly saying there are races living here and we are in communication with them. That is the power behind this hour.
Well, you are absolutely correct. If I were an extraterrestrial and I were arriving fresh at Earth, and I decided, well, before I land and begin to walk the streets with these people, let me just back off and watch for a minute and see what's going on. I would watch for, maybe 2 or 3 hours. I would turn my spaceship around and go back where I came from. This planet is insane. Absolutely insane. We have it within our power. We have the technology. It's available now. To substantially walk away from petroleum fuel.
Now, oh, yeah,
I'm not
absolutely
going to say that we have, maybe we do, but I'm not going to say we have what it takes to walk away 100%. But to walk away from petroleum-based fuels, hydrocarbon fuels, to walk away from that in the majority. Now, we could do that right now. Now, if what the global warming crowd says is true, which it isn't, but if it is, why aren't they leading the band to force that technology onto the market? Why are we still paying what we're paying for fuel? Why are we still using that fuel? It's just not necessary. It is absolutely not necessary.
Well, that's correct. I mean, I'm sitting in the office of the newest electric car plant in this country, and we're getting ready to produce affordable pickup trucks that people can drive and charge up in their own garage with their own electricity for about $1 a day, and take care of 90% of the commuting and service vehicle needs of small towns and even large cities. You would not believe how difficult it is to fund such a venture, even though almost all the vehicles we could produce for the next 3 years are already sold. It is very difficult to get something like that off the ground.
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking about when I say this planet is insane. This planet has the inmates running the asylum.
Well, let's see if we can turn around the straitjacket and unlace this thing in our next hour. My guest is Kevin Smith. His website is kevinsmithshow.com. And it's not the Kevin Smith Show, right? It's just kevinsmithshow.com?
That's correct. Just kevinsmithshow.com.
Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 Pacific. I promise you will not be disappointed. It takes off where coast to coast ever thought about being. The guests that come on his program are similar to the ones that come on our program, but the things that you will go into and be privy to at that level of interview are just amazing. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. Go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back after this.
Thank you.
If you've been fortunate enough to go out there and see the movie 2012, one of the things that you noticed in that movie is they talk about a pole shift. If you want to know the science of it, you really want to know what is possible and can it really happen, I suggest that you go to xsquaredradio.com and click on the Horizon Project banner. It might be the most important examination of future events in the world today. I can tell you that this DVD is very high quality. It's put out by Brent Miller and his son. They do a really, really good job on it. Good interviews. It is something that should be on History Channel or Discovery Channel. It might be in upcoming showings, but you really need the uncut version with all the bonus material. So go to xsquaredradio.com, go about halfway down the page, click on the Horizon Project banner. Also, if you are watching Truth TV tomorrow night, or should I say the 2nd of December on Tuesday night, June Sarpong and Jesse Ventura are hosting a program in which we talk about weather warfare. I was featured on this program, built an experiment for that program, and we actually demonstrate on a small scale how HAARP can move a cloud. So if you really want to see what's going on out there, what our government is up to as far as weapon systems and how they're playing around in the upper atmosphere, tune into that, Truth TV, and check it out. Jesse Ventura, June Sarpong are hosting that program, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So don't pass it up. My guest tonight is Kevin Smith from kevinsmithshow.com. Final hour coming up, 40 seconds away. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to X Squared Radio, our third and final hour. This is where we take the gloves off. Make sure that you have your tray table in its upright and locked position, your seat reclined and seat belt fastened. Here we go. Welcome back to the program, Kevin.
Glad to still be here.
Two things that we've covered tonight, and we've really laid down in style, and I think with some power, and that is that leaders in the scientific community, not just in the U.S. now, but now in Bulgaria, with the Bulgarian Academy of Science, are coming forward and saying not UFOs are real, not there's intelligent life out there, but that aliens are here on this planet right now among us.
That's right.
Now, one of the implications is that they're among us and we don't even know it. Is this because they're out of sight or because they look so much like us that we cannot tell the difference?
Well, Dr. Filipov, we did not get a clear answer to that. It was one of the things he was evasive about until we could talk with him on his private cell phone, which, of course, we have not been able to do. But from other sources, other people that I have talked to on this show, they say that, yes, that there are human-looking aliens that can walk around, and you would never think they're not human. They can walk around, they put on a suit and shirt and tie and walk down the street. You'd never know.
Oh, come on. Have you been to the mall lately? I mean, it wouldn't be that hard to blend in. By the way, this hour we're going to open the phone lines. Toll-free U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. And if you don't have access to toll-free, if you're in Australia or Europe, don't worry. Here's the phone number. Anywhere on planet, off planet, if you can reach a cell phone tower, you can get to us, 530-776-5154. 530-776-5154. We'll make that announcement again in 15 minutes if you missed that. Yeah, exactly. If you go to the mall, to the beach, you're going to see some pretty strange-looking humans out there, affectionately called cartoon people. Some of them look like they're right out of Homer Simpson's drawings. But that being said, it would not be that difficult for aliens, short of pointy ears and blue skin, although I have seen blue skin lately, tattooed, of course, but it wouldn't be that hard to blend in, as long as some semblance of communication or non-offensive behavior allows them to get by. So,
I mean, we do it. In my former profession, I was international police. And I've lived all over the world. And I was in a situation once where I was in a very, very, very anti-American area. And I was traveling with a friend of mine who was from, he's Serb. And we were in an extremely anti-American area. We absolutely had to stop for fuel for the car. And when we walked in to pay, it was sort of a little restaurant inside, you know, gas station outside. And one of the guys was really ticked with America, and he stood up and started making some statements because he saw me. I was not in uniform, but he assumed from my look I was American. But I told him in Serbian, I'm a major with the Russian Army. And he said, oh, I'm sorry, Major, accept my apology. But the point was that, yes, I look like I'm not from there, but I can pass as I'm human, and I can pass as I belong here even if I'm not from here. And I think that there are situations like that where you and I and other people perhaps have encountered extraterrestrials, didn't know it. We recognize they didn't look like they're from around here. But, who is? And we just went on.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say that it hasn't happened to me. I mean, I go places and, you know, people don't know how to do this or how to fix that or how to run that, and they have pieces of equipment sitting on their floor that never did work since the day they bought them, and the manuals are sitting there on the table and no one can understand them. So you pick up the manual, thumb through it, figure it out, flip the switch, and on it comes. And the next word is, hey, where are you from? I always say the same thing, Earth. I'm from Earth. So, there's a way to get around this. You know, short of having horns and multiple appendages other than arms, I think it would be pretty easy to pass on this planet, especially if you could halfway communicate or, as it were, remain, you know, ignominious, that you're so unoffensive, you're like wallpaper.
Yeah.
In large plants, we have engineers that we call wallpaper, because they never actually turn anything in, and so they never actually do anything wrong. And before long, you realize they've been there 20 years. They're never late. They never leave early. They never speak. They don't. They always stand in the back, and they never get in trouble because they never actually do anything. We call them wallpaper.
Well, some of them may be extraterrestrial. You never know.
Never know. You said that they're in surveillance mode. And my question was, surveilling for who? Are they reporting to someone? Are they sending messages off planet? No, they're still not ready. Give them another few years.
I don't know who they're reporting to, but the fact that they're doing surveillance would indicate that they're reporting to someone for
sure.
Some purpose. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when you're surveilling someone, it means that you're watching for a change in behavior, or you're watching for evidence of something. You're not integrating with that person. You're not involving yourself with that person. You're not communicating with that person. You are surveilling them.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily a sinister thing. Again, in my former profession, at one point I was an intelligence officer. And the primary thing that we were interested in was any indication of anything that could be dangerous or harmful to the rest of the international community that was serving in that country. And so it wasn't anything sinister. It wasn't that we were doing surveillance because we were going to put together some plan and do some action, but it was for our own protection. And so it would seem natural to me, if you're not from this planet and you're sort of the forward group, then at least part of your activity is going to be that. You're going to be doing force protection surveillance.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And, you know, again, I would assume that they have picked up on that most of this planet is insane and they're dangerous to us as extraterrestrials.
Well, you know, you're painting with a broad brush. You know, it's like saying, okay, let's make an assumption. One of my listeners is out there texting in saying, you know, that we're all children of God. Okay, yes, children of God grow up to be what? And assuming that we're children, there are older children and there are younger children. And maybe there's some rule out there that older children are not allowed to share too much with the younger children. It's sort of like showing a four-year-old how to light a match.
Well, I think that's true. But now, when I say most of this planet is insane and would be dangerous to them, I'm not talking about most of the population. I'm talking about the people that lead the nations.
Oh, yes, of course.
And I think that most governments, when it comes to extraterrestrials, are insane. And I think most of them, well, let me say this. I think they have insane policies, which indicates that they are insane. And I think in many cases they are danger to an extraterrestrial. They'd want to capture him. They'd want to do tests on him. They'd want to dissect him. If I were in another country and they wanted to capture me and dissect me, I consider that a danger.
Yeah, I would sure. Yeah, consider that. And you know, every time I go in for a checkup, the doctors want to dissect me. But that was my stab at humor. They often ask you, okay, bring all the drugs that you're taking and bring them in and we'll do a checkup. So you go in and, okay, empty your pockets. What are you taking? Nothing. Give me a list of the surgeries you've had in your life. None. Well, that's very rare, Mr. Agnew.
Uh-huh.
Not where I'm from.
Yeah, you know, I want to sort of get back into something you were talking about earlier. You were talking about how we're all divided up over religion or, you know, our nation, and you know, we have wars over every kind of thing. You know, it would not even be necessary to have a global government
in order for that stuff to go away.
You're right.
Yeah, it would be possible for people just to settle down and mind their own business, and then you have world peace. What goes on in a country is their business, not mine. What goes on in this country is our business, not theirs. And if people just mind their own business and live and let live, then you don't even need a global government. All you need is, all you would have is just world peace.
Well, yes, that's easier said than done. I mean, when we're over here and we're adjudicating our system in a civilized manner, somewhat civilized, we still practice incarceration, which I consider to be cruel and unusual. But in other countries, they hack off hands and, beat adulteresses to death in the public square. That is not something that we could stand by and let happen. And we cannot abide tribal genocide, where we, get in pickup trucks and ride down the road and hack the opposing tribe to pieces. We can't just stand by and let them mind their own business.
Well, we don't want to, but we could. One of the big problems that is not recognized by people who do foreign policy in almost every country is that when you show up, whether it's unilaterally or with the United Nations, in a country where there's some conflict, and you impose peace, you can do so only so long as you have enough people, therefore power, enough money, and enough political will to do so. If any one of those three legs falls out from under the equation, and it's usually the political will, then the enforcement of peace collapses. All of the reasons that those people were fighting still exist.
Sure.
And it will all surface again. So in all of our efforts to cure the world's ills, the best we can do is like putting a Band-Aid on a wet finger. You can get it on there, but it won't stick. Eventually, every conflict has to have a winner and a loser, and then you deal with the winner. It's sad, but it's true, and that's why the world stays continually at war, because we keep trying to stop them.
Yeah, and history is always written by the winners.
That's true.
And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the people who actually win public office are the ones who want it. Most savvy business people who want to lead an organization make a decent amount of money where they can retire and provide some better living for other people, including their own families, wouldn't even think about going into politics. It's the lowest paying job out there, with the exception of president, because you get the open checkbook for the rest of your life. But a congressman is a low-paid, small company CEO.
Yeah.
Who would take the job is really the last man standing, because once you see what goes on in Washington and how powerless you really are, who would have the job for $140,000 a year?
Well, I agree with you. You got no argument from me. What's pretty clear is that these people that we elect have it. They've got that figured out, and they do things to make their income greater than their salary, and they end up representing the people who are giving them the greater income. And, there's like a 12% approval rating for Congress, but a 95% reelection rate.
Yeah, there's only 435 of them, people. I mean, I can find 435 better leaders in a town of 17,000 people in the South than are in Washington. I say let's pull the silver handle on all of them and replace them all. But that being said, the elected officials of our country are not the leaders of our country. The leaders of our country are the heads of the bureaucracies that tell those politicians what they can and cannot do.
That is, well, they and certain corporate interests as well.
Sure. I mean, look at the Department of Energy. They had, in our case, the electric vehicle grant, the only grant that I can remember in recent history for electric vehicles, one grant. Those of you that think there have been more are sadly misinformed. There's only been one. And if you want to know the number, it was DEFOA 000028, if you want to know which grant number it was. It was worth $378 million, which is barely lunch money for the big car makers. It was slated to go to electric vehicle producers to allow small business to get a foothold and start producing electric vehicles. Surprise, all the money went to the big four. It went to Ford, GM, Chrysler, and Nissan. And none of the electric vehicle companies got a penny. Not a dime. Some of them didn't even get thank you letters for their multi-hundred page applications and their fine technologies. So the Department of Energy is into their armpits with major industry, not with the innovative technologies that are trying their darndest to come forward. Kevin is exactly right. Keep the phone lines open, toll free, anywhere U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. If you don't have toll-free service in your country, don't worry about it. Get to a cell phone tower, 530-776-5154, 530-776-5154. We have about 20 minutes left in the program. You have a rare opportunity to ask questions about one of the most earth-shaking alien on Earth stories to break in recent history, coming from the Bulgarian Academy of Science, Dr. Filipov, giving a press release that aliens are among us and that we are communicating with them all the time, and more news is coming. Now, Filipov evidently has been sequestered or is being censored, and some political and maybe even employment pressure being brought against him. For what reason, we have no idea. It's not like the rest of the world doesn't know that they're here. But it's just nice to have scientific backup to say, yes, general public, your gut feeling is correct. They are here, and we are working with them. So if you've got a question about that, now is the time to bring it up. So Kevin, if you had, I know you're keeping your cards close to the vest as to your next step in this investigation, finding out whether Filipov did say it, what he said, what questions were asked, and what's happening to him now. I know that you're not going to let this ball drop, and you're going to bring out even more information on your program, which is the Kevin Smith Show, and that's kevinsmithshow.com. For those of you that want to pick up a show during the week, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific. What is going to happen if the dam breaks? What is going to happen if there's just so much factual information that the deluge cannot be stopped by the information cops? And the general public gets their hands on enough data that they finally believe the Earth is round.
Well, first, there are going to be news agencies. The very first ramifications will be news agencies like CNN, Fox, MSNBC, CBS, ABC, and NBC that are going to be standing around with egg on their faces. At worst, they're just going to be completely irrelevant from here on out, because everyone in this country will want to know why you didn't hear this on CNN. Why didn't you hear this on MSNBC? Why instead are we hearing about Britney and Madonna and Angelina Jolie instead of something that matters? So the first tsunami, the first effect of the tsunami will be casting most of our major media completely to the side. They are not mainstream media. They are major because of their size. But they are fringe media now because they don't tell you the stuff that's really going on this planet. Okay, the next ramification is going to be, I think, a lot of congressional investigations into who knew what and when. And, you know, if there's any hope for the people who have done the cover-up and who have ruined lives, careers, and even ended lives over trying to keep this all secret, if there's any hope for them to skate and to escape prosecution, the only hope is to come out with it right now. But when the dam finally breaks, in my opinion, the dam broke. When that story appeared in major media in Bulgaria, the dam broke. They're just, major media in this country is just trying to keep you ignorant of that fact.
I don't know what the major media in this country does. You know, it really doesn't matter if you're channel surfing and you go CNN, MSNBC, Fox, you're going to get exactly the same headlines, just a different bubble-headed bleach blonde talking about it. But you're going to get the same exact story, almost in the same order, from every single news agency out there. The only one that I know of that consistently runs the first scoop on a lot of breaking stories is Drudge Report.
Yeah.
And he's not even on television.
Yeah. And but the ramifications of this are going to be gigantic, gigantic. The lid is off. I'm sure there are people in Bulgaria working hard to try and put the lid back on, but it's off. And we're doing everything we can, you and I, to make sure that everyone knows the lid is off. And, I mean, pretending that there are no extraterrestrials is like pretending there are no clouds.
Yeah, well, I made the joke about the round Earth, but, you know, this is where we're at. No media outlet wants to be the first to declare heavier-than-air flight is now possible. It's sort of a herd mentality. Somewhere early in the morning, I don't know exactly which hour, because I'm up at all hours, the talking points go out. And within minutes, the stories are formulated, the graphics are put together, and the theme song is chosen for the various news stories. And, you know, in case you haven't realized this, news organizations come with their own lawyers, their own judges, and their own juries, and they routinely convict people, try them and convict them in the press.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And, look, if I see it or hear it in any major media, my practice is divide it by 10, and maybe you'll be down near the truth.
Yeah.
And but, you know, it's not just that they slant the news. They select the news, as you were stating. But, you know, sometimes they outright lie. I had examples of that when I was overseas, where I actually had a stringer for one of the major news networks that we were just talking about that came to me and said, we have unconfirmed reports of this and that.
I won't get specific about it because it would be a very long story. So to make a long story short, we checked into it. I even put this reporter, a female reporter, in my vehicle and drove across the mountains to verify what she was saying. And we verified it was not true. That night, on the news, they said, we have unconfirmed reports that blah, 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 blah. Well,
wow.
We didn't have unconfirmed reports that that was going on. We had confirmed that that was not true. And yet here in America, you got, we have unconfirmed reports that this is happening.
Yeah.
And
anonymous source.
You know, I saw a reporter that I know. Watched him on television. I had satellite television. So I watched him on television file a report from Kosovo. So he said, and he, at the end of his report, first of all, everything he said, none of that happened in Kosovo that day. None of it. Then, at the end of his report, he said, from Pristina, Kosovo, he said his name. And the camera moved back so that we could see what was around him.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. And when it did, I could see where he was. He was standing in front of the Alexander Palace Hotel in Skopje, Macedonia. And I know that for sure because I've stayed there.
Wow.
So sometimes they just lie.
Yeah, it's sort of like the last Bruce Willis Die Hard movie. Supposedly it took place in Baltimore. But it was all filmed in El Segundo. I was there.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's intended as fiction. But this was reported as true.
Yeah.
I saw a president hold up pictures of mass graves, satellite pictures of mass graves. And I went and stood in the field where that picture was supposed to be. And the only thing in that field was a farmer plowing.
Wow. How did they pull that one off?
Ever heard of the movie Wag the Dog?
Yeah, theme song and all.
Yeah, well, there you go. And, you know, people that think that doesn't happen are living in Alice's Wonderland. It does happen.
Hmm.
And Brooks, this is happening with the extraterrestrial subject.
Yeah,
and,
you know, if someone were to ask me, and they often do, you know, oh, you don't believe in UFOs, do you? The first question out of my mouth is, you really don't believe we're alone in the universe, do you?
Good question. Well, look, I don't believe in UFOs. There's nothing to believe. That's like asking me to believe in doorknobs. I know they exist. I'm
exactly.
Looking at one on my studio door right now. I know they exist. And with UFOs, what is there to believe? That's belief. That's the same thing as faith. There's nothing to believe. There are literally miles of footage, film and video, of UFOs. A lot of it shot by NASA. And, you know, these are not hallucinations. Cameras don't photograph hallucinations. These are real
objects.
That's why cameras see them.
Especially multiple cameras. I have been side by side, two different cameras. Mine's a Kodak, and this woman's was, I think, a Sony camera. And we were photographing the same UFO. We both shot our cameras, took pictures with our cameras, multiple shots. The UFO showed up in both cameras, multiple shots, almost the same angle. She was about, I don't know, 6 feet to my left, 10 feet to my left, and we were photographing in broad daylight. Now, you can't tell me that two digital cameras in broad daylight both had the same flaw at the same time, photographing the same thing.
That's right. Well, how about this? On November the 27th, down in Lima, Peru, in the daytime, a fleet of UFOs went over Lima, Peru. And actually, when they arrived over the city, they just sort of stayed there. And just
moved around a little bit, but stayed over the city for hours. And we're talking about Friday. On Friday, there were literally hundreds, possibly thousands of people in the streets looking up and seeing them. And there were about 13 or 14 of them. Did thousands of people have the same eyesight disorder? You know, so the question of do you believe in UFOs, in my estimation, you know, I'm not politically correct, but I think that's the dumbest question anybody can ask. Do you believe in UFOs? Do you believe in Volkswagens? You know, do you believe in beer cans? What's there to believe? Either they exist or they don't.
But still, even in our modern society, even in our nation, I was going to say, where would they look at you sideways? I mean, they're not going to look at you sideways in the Crystal's restaurant, but they would look at you sideways perhaps in the astronomy department. Now, I've got I belong to the Catawba Sky Observatory in Maiden, North Carolina. One of the best astronomy clubs on the East Coast. They have more clear sky events than anywhere else on the East Coast. They've got a great observatory, very active, very well-educated astronomy department there. But they will not hear of any discussion of UFOs when they're out on a dark sky event. They just won't hear of it. It is absolutely bad science to them. So,
well, see, the Catholic Church would not hear of our planet in orbit around the sun and refuse to look through a telescope. But who was right, them or Galileo? Well, Galileo was right. And you see, it doesn't. The truth is the truth, and reality is reality, whether anybody believes it or not. And the Catholic Church continued to enforce the flat earth, well, not flat earth, I'm using that generically, but the notion that everything is in orbit around the earth.
Yeah,
they
geocentrism.
They continued to enforce that belief for hundreds of years, and were wrong every second of every day.
Yes,
so
they were.
That's the way the intellectual mudsuckers are. They're wrong.
Well, when they got to Egypt and discovered that they had tremendously accurate star charts and calendars, and all relied on the idea not only that the Earth revolved around our sun, but that our sun revolved around Sirius.
Uh-huh.
And they just obfuscated the whole thing. I'm amazed. Even when you saw the movie Angels and Demons, one of the things that you realized with CERN is that the Vatican was deeply involved in the operation of that observatory.
Well, it looks like the Vatican is trying to get out ahead of the band on this extraterrestrial issue. It looks like they don't want to be on the wrong side of history this time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. By the way, we were the church that brought it to you first. So, yeah.
Well, again, I don't believe in UFOs. I know they exist. And by the way, you know, the government has officially admitted they exist. Project Blue Book, everyone, when they quote that, they always say, well, the vast majority were just natural things that could be explained away. Yeah, the vast majority were. How many UFOs does it take to prove there are UFOs? One.
That's a good question. Yeah, that's exactly right. Either they are or they are not.
Yeah, it
you
takes
know,
one.
I am a statistician. And one of the things that cracks me up is on the news, they will say, well, 37% of the people think that this is absolutely false. Well, doesn't that mean that 63% of the people believe it's true?
Yeah. It's how you report it. It's how you word it. The fact is, and this is a really, really important fact for you and me. The fact is, people are turning to shows like yours and mine to get their information because we don't bend it and we don't slant it, and we bring the stuff that others won't talk about. And the numbers are interesting. In the latest Edison Research, Edison Media Research Group poll, which they do every year, they ask people every year, what is the most essential media? And it goes in this order. Television, this is the order people put it in. Television, internet, radio, newspapers. Now, there's only about 4 points difference between television. But here's the interesting thing. There's 11 points difference. There's television, internet, and then 11 points down is radio.
Mm-hmm.
And then newspapers are almost off the end of the cliff. All right, now, television came out number one only because of the age group from 44 and up. Well, next year, that group is 45 and up. And there's 1 year's worth of people who think internet is the most important have now moved into the 44 age group.
Right.
And off the back end of the scale, that 44 and up becomes 45 and up. And we're being kind. It's actually 44 to death, and then 45 to death, and then 46 to death. So more and more of that crowd is falling off the end of the cliff every year, and more of the people who think internet is the most essential media are moving into that group. So within 2 to 3 years, internet will replace television as the most significant media.
Well, look at the difference. I mean, television as a national media has only been around since the late 50s. In the early 50s, not every household had a television, and there were only three stations. By the early 60s, there were about 11 stations in most metropolitan areas, but still, not every household had a television. It wasn't until the mid-60s that TV really became a major media to which people turned for the evening news, and it became much more organized and less of a novelty. But 1965 till 2009 is 44 years. The internet has only been usable by the general populace since 1996, and it took almost, not quite, almost 5 years before dial-up became the lesser access than cable or broadband. So really, we're looking at 2001 to 2009 when broadband internet became available to everyone. That's approximately 9 years. Uh-huh. In 9 years, the internet became a close number two to television, and it will surpass it very, very soon.
Yeah, and I say 2 to 3 years, it could be sooner. And one of the great, great things about what you and I are doing right now is that people all over the world can listen to us. They don't have to be in our geographical area as they would have to if we were on television or broadcast radio. I have listeners in China. I got a show the other night from China. I have listeners in Vietnam, Australia, Sweden, Norway, the United Kingdom, Canada, the Philippines, all over the world. So this information that we're talking about here today has hit the earth. The story of Dr. Filipov has hit the earth through what we're doing here today. There is no way for them to put a lid on it now.
Mm. Well, speaking of calls from all over the world, Ramon is on from New York. Welcome to the program, Ramon.
I saw yesterday on my Facebook, and I was so excited. It was
Bring the sound levels in a little better.
$1 million.
One more
Sorry?
Time, Ramon. Go ahead.
I said I saw the news yesterday on my Facebook, which is sad that I have to get that kind of news on Facebook out of all places.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. But But my comment, and I'll make it quick because I know we're running out of time, is I somewhat disagree as far as if they landed and came down. I think what they would do at that point, strategy-wise, is they'll make them sound like, okay, now they're the invaders and they're invading us and they're going to try to take over the planet, which in reality, we all know if they really wanted to do that, it would have been done a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like
you're in present danger,
like
right?
They'll
exactly.
Turn it. They'll turn it because enough people are in denial and ignorant about it. Like, we all know that they've, as far as the extraterrestrials, they've made huge attempts, like flying over Turkey, flying over China. Like, what? If I was them, I would just be like, you know what, forget it, because they just really don't want to know, because as much as they made moves, they've contacted thousands of people, you know, one-to-one, and still, like, nothing, you know? And you've had presidents come out say that they've seen it from all over the world, not just the United States. You've had government. You've had all sorts of people say, yes, it is true, and yet nothing. Astronauts, nothing.
Can I throw something into the mix here? Yeah, let me throw this in. You're exactly right. But we in the UFO community are partially at fault, because we keep talking about believe. And there's nothing to believe. Absolutely nothing. I mean, do you believe in salt? You know, salt is, it just is. It exists. And we keep allowing the discussion to move that direction. And so we're asking people, when we use the word believe, we're asking them to make a leap of faith. There's no faith involved in doorknobs. There's no faith involved in salt, beer, or Coca-Cola. And there's no faith to be involved in UFOs. The evidence is in. The debate is over. They exist. And, you know, anybody that wants to see the evidence can see the evidence. Even if they've never seen a UFO, they can see them on video, they can see them on film, they can see them on NASA videos. So the debate's over. But we keep talking about believe. And because we do, we open the door to debate and discussion. We've made it a religion. It's not a religion. It's just a fact. And when we start hammering that, we'll nail down the coffin lid on much of the debaters' debate.
Well, Kevin, what do you think about Ramon's assertion that if there was, let's say, a big ship that came in and landed and aliens stepped out, what about this clear and present danger, sovereign airspace, this is our planet kind of mentality, that they're here to invade and they're not welcome?
Sure, I think that would happen. And I think in any nation where they landed like that, they're likely to be fired upon. And that's why I say, and I know there are lots of people that disagree with me on this, that's why I say that basically this planet is insane. But I think that would happen. However, what if when we're asleep at night and we're not out there looking at the sky, they land and let a few people off, and then they take off? And tomorrow, those people are in Safeway buying groceries. You'd never know it.
Well, you would by the inordinate amount of time they spend in the frozen food section. But other than that, no. Ramon, Kevin, we are out of time. We've got to give enough time for the studio to get the next host on. I have really, really appreciated you coming on the program tonight. It was kind of short notice. We didn't have a script. We never do in this business. Fly by the seat of your pants and go by the questions that the callers bring in. Ramon, was that all your thoughts?
Thank you very much, and I can't wait till they land.
All right. Well, you and me too. I want advance notice so I can be there and have plenty of room on my camera. Kevin, thank you so very much for coming on the program. And remember, it's kevinsmithshow.com, 7 to 9 p.m. Pacific. It's just like this. You can access it from anywhere, even your iPod, and listen.
Even from Nibiru.
Yeah, even from Nibiru, right. On planet or off planet. It's one of the nice things about being extraterrestrial radio.
That's
if you can
right.
get to a cell phone tower, you can find us.
Well, Brooks, it's been a pleasure to be with you. It always is. And, you know, I just hope that people will understand this man took a huge risk, maybe paying for that. But
sure.
He took a huge risk, and he did disclosure.
Well, we're proud of him, and let me know how your investigation comes out, because I know you're not going to give up. You're going to find the truth. That's what you do.
That's correct. We have some more steps to take, and putting those cards very close to the vest, but I will let you know.
Very good. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for coming on.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you.
Have a wonderful week. Earth Explorers, that is it for the final show of November 2009. Next month is December. We have a line of guests coming up that you're going to be amazed by, as always. We'll see you next week right here on X Squared Radio. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.